media, and your planet. Right here on KPFK, your only real independent voice on the airwaves in Los Angeles. Please go to kpfk.org and click donate to join the circle today.
You're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and live around the world at kpfk.org.
Good evening. It's Wednesday, January 21st. I'm Max Pringle. Coming up, President Trump backs off tariff threats today against eight European countries that oppose his designs on Greenland. He says he's worked out a deal with NATO for a U.S. presence on the Danish island. The Supreme Court today appeared skeptical of the Trump administration's argument that the president has the right to fire Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook for alleged mortgage fraud. A House committee advances contempt of Congress charges against former President Bill Clinton and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton for refusing to appear for depositions on their connections to the late sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Officials in Maine prepare for a possible immigration enforcement surge in that state. And Governor Gavin Newsom's office say he was uninvited speak at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, under pressure from the Trump administration. These stories and more coming up from the studios of KPFA in Berkeley. This is the Pacifica Evening News. I'm Max Pringle. President Trump said today he will drop his threat of imposing tariffs on several European countries for opposing his demand to take over Greenland. He announced a new framework with NATO on Arctic security. However, the details are sketchy. This change of heart comes after his speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos earlier today, where he said the U.S. would not use force to pursue control of Greenland. Trump later addressed reporters about the status of the deal.
Well, the deal is going to be put out pretty soon. We'll see. It's right now a little bit in progress, but pretty far along. It gets us everything we needed to get.
Meanwhile, the U.S. stock market is steadying following those remarks. Trump had previously expressed his ambition to secure ownership of Greenland, urging NATO allies not to interfere. European leaders have criticized his tariff plans, with French President Emmanuel Macron suggesting possible economic retaliation. Critics of President Trump's aggressive ambitions toward Greenland have many analysts worried that his actions could upend NATO and lead to a world where big power politics rules the day. Simon Marks has more.
With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks. Hearing more today from a former top Trump official as the US leader prepares for absolutely crucial talks with his European counterparts at the World Economic Forum in Davos. The row over Greenland is only intensifying. President Trump reposted a social media message yesterday that described the United Nations and NATO as the real threat to the world. Robert Wilkie worked on the US president's transition team in late 2024. Before that, he was Secretary of Veterans Affairs in the first Trump term. He is deeply worried about the U.S. leader's current trajectory.
We have the chance now of rending asunder and fulfilling Vladimir Putin's dreams, Russian dreams, of tearing apart the Western alliance, which has been the goal of Bolsheviks and kleptocrats for the last 75, 80 years. And that is a tremendous tragedy. But look, 70% of the American people oppose this. They understand what this means. The majority of President Trump supporters are not in favor of this. And we'll see how that plays out.
It is certainly not playing well with Trump's NATO allies. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said on Tuesday that he believes the moment of rupture with the United States has now arrived. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
KPFA's Christopher Martinez has more on President Trump's keynote speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos this week, where he touched on Greenland and some of his other favorite grievances.
The annual World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, bills itself as a place to discuss how capitalism can benefit more. That's a broad topic, and President Donald Trump spoke on a broad variety of issues during his keynote speech to the forum. But perhaps the biggest issue he addressed was one he said he had planned to leave out of the speech.
Would you like me to say a few words of Greenland?
Trump's repeated wish to take over Greenland, a territory of Denmark, has sparked turmoil. Denmark's prime minister has said an attempt to take over the island by force would mean the end of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. But Trump says he's actually helping NATO.
I have tremendous respect for both the people of Greenland and the people of Denmark. Tremendous respect. But every NATO ally has an obligation to be able to defend their own territory. And the fact is, no nation or group of nations is in any position to be able to secure Greenland other than the United States. We're a great power.
He also denied rumors that he wants to take over Greenland because of rare earths and minerals.
That's not the reason we need it. We need it for strategic national security and international security. This enormous, unsecured island is actually part of North America. On the northern frontier of the Western Hemisphere, that's our territory. It is therefore a core national security interest of the United States of America. And in fact, it's been our policy for hundreds of years to prevent outside threats from entering our hemisphere, and we've done it very successfully.
Perhaps most notably, Trump walked back his threats to use military force to acquire Greenland.
I don't have to use force. I don't want to use force. I won't use force. All the United States is asking for is a place called Greenland, where we already had it, as a trustee, but respectfully returned it back to Denmark not long ago after we defeated the Germans, the Japanese, the Italians, and others in World War II. We gave it back to them. We were a powerful force then, but we are a much more powerful force now.
Of course, this being a Trump speech, the president also recalled some of his pet grievances. Radical left Democrats, sleepy Joe Biden, crooked media, windmills. He also spoke about the war in Ukraine, using that point to make a threat about the 2020 presidential election that he lost to Biden.
It's a war that should have never started, and it wouldn't have started if the 2020 U.S. presidential election weren't rigged. It was a rigged election. Everybody now knows that. They found out. People will soon be prosecuted for what they did.
He did not say who will be prosecuted or what crimes they would be charged with. Trump also touched on the issue of Venezuela, saying that the leadership of that country has been very good.
We've been given great cooperation. Once the attack ended and they said, let's make a deal. More people should do that.
But back to the Greenland issue and the NATO alliance, Trump says he's done more for the military alliance than anyone, but he says the U.S. has been treated unfairly.
We've helped them for so many years. We've never gotten anything, except we pay for NATO. And we paid for many years until I came along. We paid for, in my opinion, 100% of NATO because they weren't paying their bills. And all we're asking for is to get Greenland, including right title and ownership, because you need the ownership to defend it. You can't defend it on a lease. Number one, legally it's not defensible that way, totally. And number two, psychologically, who the hell wants to defend a license agreement?
Trump also announced he's ending his plans to levy tariffs on U.S. allies in Europe who oppose a takeover of Greenland. That decision follows an agreement with NATO on a framework for a future Arctic deal. Meanwhile, Russian officials, state-backed media, and pro-Kremlin bloggers were watching with a mixture of glee, gloating, and wariness. Some said Trump's move weakens the European Union and NATO, and that it pushes Russia's war in Ukraine to the sidelines for the West. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov also drew parallels between Trump's bid for Greenland and Russia's annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula in 2014, which many nations do not recognize as legal. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Meanwhile, Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen is meeting with British Prime Minister Keir Starmer in London on Thursday. Starmer said he stands firmly behind the sovereignty of Denmark and Greenland. Stuart Smith has more.
The UK is trying to keep ties with the United States strong while supporting European NATO ally Denmark, which owns Greenland. Britain has publicly supported Copenhagen's position, but unlike the EU, the UK openly ruled out a trade war with the United States in retaliation. However, that wasn't enough to prevent criticism from Donald Trump of the UK, who said Britain was stupid and weak for ceding sovereignty of its Chagos Islands to Mauritius in a recent but unrelated deal. Prime Minister Keir Starmer earlier told lawmakers this was a tactic by Washington to put pressure on London, but that Britain would not yield.
And that's Stuart Smith in London. The Supreme Court today appeared to be leaning against President Trump being able to fire Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook. The justices heard arguments today over Trump's effort to remove Cook based on allegations she committed mortgage fraud. She's denied any wrongdoing. Solicitor General D. John Sauer argued the president's case that Cook fraudulently claimed two homes as her primary residence to get better mortgage loan terms, and that makes her, in his eyes, unfit to be a Federal Reserve governor.
Such behavior impugns Cook's conduct, fitness, ability, or competence to serve as a governor of the Federal Reserve. The American people should not have their interest rates determined by someone who was, at best, grossly negligent in obtaining favorable interest rates for herself.
No president has ever fired a sitting governor in the board's 112-year history. Trump's critics say his true motivation for trying to oust Cook is the president's desire to exert control over interest rate policy. If Cook is ousted, Trump would be able to appoint a fourth member of the seven-member board, giving him a majority. Cook's attorney, Paul Clement, said letting a president remove a Federal Reserve governor for political reasons would remove the board's independence.
The sum total of the Solicitor General's arguments would reduce the removal restriction in this unique institution to something that could only be recognized as at-will employment.
Clement argued that would mean no due process before removal, reducing the job to being at the president's whims. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said for the Federal Reserve to function as intended, it needs the trust of the American public.
The aim is to ensure that this institution is not being pressured by the executive branch, by the president, with respect to its determinations, that people can't just be fired because the president wants them to.
The case presented the court with one of the more extraordinary efforts by Trump to expand presidential power. A decision in the case is expected by early summer. The House Oversight Committee today advanced resolutions to hold former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in contempt of Congress over the Jeffrey Epstein investigation. The Republican-controlled panel approved the contempt of Congress charges in a bipartisan vote. It sets up a potential vote in the full House. Committee Chair James Comer of Kentucky said the Clintons have refused subpoenas to testify about their relationship to the late sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein and his associate Ghislaine Maxwell.
The committee does not take this action lightly, but subpoenas are not mere suggestions. They carry the force of law and require compliance. Former President Clinton and Secretary Clinton were legally required to appear for depositions before this committee. They refused.
Democrats on the committee said the GOP majority has not been as determined to get to the bottom of the Epstein case, given their refusal to subpoena Attorney General Pam Bondi as to why she's only released a fraction of the Epstein files, and those she did release were heavily redacted. Summer Lee is a Pennsylvania Democrat.
We are 1 week out from Bill and Hillary Clinton, who did not show up for their depositions. 1 week, and we're already having a markup to hold them in contempt. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice has been legally obligated to hand over the full unredacted Epstein files to this committee since August, the same exact subpoena that they are using to hold the Clintons in contempt. And please note that these resolutions are allowing the DOJ to prosecute the Clintons for the exact same things that the DOJ itself is violating.
Democrats were split on the measures. A number of progressive lawmakers called for full transparency in the Epstein investigation, even if it meant threatening a former Democratic president if he refuses to testify. The penalties for ignoring a congressional subpoena could include substantial fines or incarceration. The full House would have to approve a contempt of Congress charge. Maine has become the latest target in the Trump administration's immigration enforcement wave. The Department of Homeland Security named the enforcement operation Catch of the Day, an apparent play on the state's seafood industry. Maine has relatively few residents who are in the U.S. illegally, but has a notable presence of refugees in some of its larger cities. An appeals court today suspended a decision that prohibits federal officers from using tear gas or pepper spray against peaceful protesters in Minnesota. The government persuaded the court to freeze a judge's ruling while it pursues an appeal. An Immigration and Customs Enforcement memo obtained by the Associated Press reveals that the agency allows immigration officers to forcibly enter homes to make arrests without a judicial warrant. This change reverses previous guidance and raises concerns about constitutional protections against illegal searches. The memo, signed by ICE's acting director, states that administrative warrants are sufficient for forced entry if there's a final order of removal. This policy could face legal challenges and criticism from advocacy groups. Whistleblower Aid, representing two government officials, describes the directive as seemingly unconstitutional and a significant shift in arrest powers. The Associated Press obtained the memo and whistleblower complaint from an official in Congress not authorized to speak publicly. A professor in the Midwest of Russian origin says the autocratic tactics the Trump administration is using during its immigration crackdown, taken in Minneapolis and around the country, are something he's seen before. Judith Ruiz Branch has more.
A professor at Indiana University Kokomo, Konstantin Zhukov, argues the FBI raid of a journalist's home last week is not an isolated incident, but part of an ongoing escalation since President Trump took office a year ago. He emphasizes that as someone originally from Russia, he recognizes this as a familiar autocratic move.
It's a story that you usually hear in Russia. It's a common instrument that the Russian authorities use in order to scare the journalists, to signal to them that they shouldn't do their work, essentially, that they shouldn't keep the government accountable.
Zhukov points to recent volatile policing and immigration protest dynamics in states like Illinois and Minnesota as another big concern. Last week, Chicago officials joined an Illinois lawsuit challenging allegedly unlawful and unconstitutional immigration enforcement. The Trump administration calls the lawsuit baseless and defends its immigration actions as enforcing federal law. Zhukov also links current trends to broader free speech risks, asserting that after the murder of Charlie Kirk last year, the administration issued a memorandum that sets a dangerous precedent by enabling a broad classification of domestic terrorism that could potentially include anyone who disagrees with the administration's agenda. While he believes American institutions are strong enough to withstand the current administration, he stresses how much they're being weakened and how future administrations could undermine them even more severely. clearly.
The precedent that I think it sets is that the administration will just keep pushing the boundaries of what is accepted of the executive power to do.
Zhukov recommends countermeasures like voting in the midterm elections and continuing to speak out peacefully to normalize dissent and widen public discourse. He emphasizes that recognizing autocratic tactics is essential to combating them.
What is happening right now is very dangerous, and it's a classic playbook of the autocrats, and the more people understand that these are the steps toward autocracy, the better.
For Illinois News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
Congress is negotiating a spending bill for the Department of Homeland Security amid soaring tensions on Capitol Hill after the shooting of a death of a Minnesota woman by an ICE agent. Tony Perrazzo has more.
The House of Representatives planned to look at the funding bill for the Department of Homeland Security this week, but a decision was made to pull the bill for now while lawmakers respond to the shooting of Renee Good by an ICE officer in Minnesota. Trump's deportation crackdown, focused on cities in Democratic-leaning states, has House Democrats demanding a strong legislative response, like Ted Lieu, who describes more disturbing activity by ICE.
ICE has been engaging in what appear to be clear violations of federal law. We heard that there was a detention center where they have an entire section marked U.S. citizens. That is mind-blowing. ICE enforces immigration laws, not laws against U.S. citizens. And yet, there are numerous stories of U.S. citizens being detained, being abused, being assaulted. And I want to say this. The American people have the First Amendment right to observe ICE operations.
An increasing amount of footage collected by the public could later be evidence of violent abuses against people living in the United States. Lieu praises people's efforts to document ICE in Minnesota.
Every time ICE engages in what appears to be abuse, more Minnesotans show up. Every time ICE and Border Patrol engage in what appear to be unlawful actions, more Minnesotans show up and observe, film, and live stream ICE. And this is so important because the evidence that is being gathered can be used in future years. And while this administration might not prosecute ICE officers or Border Patrol officers for violating federal law, a future administration can do so.
Outraged over the violence they say is being committed by ICE, some 70 Democrats have signed on to an effort to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. Other lawmakers are seeking specific changes to how the agency operates, such as requiring ICE agents to wear body cameras. Representative Pete Aguilar from San Bernardino doesn't think the bill is sufficient to protect people from ICE.
There aren't enough guardrails within this bill. I can still appreciate the work that went into the bill while mentioning that common sense reforms that Democrats put up as amendments and alternatives were roundly rejected. They should not be allowed to detain U.S. citizens, and they are. They should not be able to fire at moving vehicles unless their life is in danger, and they are.
If Congress passes a continuing resolution to fund the agency at current levels, that gives the Trump administration more discretion to spend the money as it wants. According to USAspending.gov, ICE is authorized to spend $77 billion this fiscal year. This is a larger budget than the militaries of most countries have. Data from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute shows only 7 countries spent more than $77 billion on their military in 2024. The United States, China, Russia, Germany, India, the United Kingdom, and Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, any vote to eliminate funding for ICE won't stop massive sums from flowing to the agency because Trump's tax cut and border security bill, passed last summer, injects roughly $170 billion into immigration enforcement over the next 4 years. For KPFA News, I'm Anthony Perrazzo.
President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill included $170 billion in funding for DHS and ICE. Justin Elliott is a ProPublica reporter. His latest article looks at how Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has used that money to feather her own nest and the nests of people close to her. He spoke with Background Briefing host Ian Masters.
I think I think there has not been enough attention paid to the money aspect of this, which is what, you know, a colleague of mine and I at ProPublica are full-time reporting on DHS and money, because I think the bill, the, you know, again, the so-called big, beautiful bill from passed through Congress and signed by President Trump last year, that's where a lot of this new money is flowing from. And I think that is, you know, has already reshaped the government in significant ways. And I think, you know, most of that money is not out the door in terms of there's a lot of money pouring towards border wall construction. You mentioned there's presumably going to be a lot of money flowing towards construction of camps by companies like Geo and Core Civic. And so there's what we're trying to do is sort of follow the money in the traditional investigative reporting sense.
Well, let's talk about what you've uncovered here with the firm tied to Kristi Noem that secretly got money from the $220 million DHS ad contracts. We know, certainly, we've heard a lot from Tricia McLaughlin, who's the chief spokesman for the DHS, because she's been the sort of liar in chief. Every time they do ISTA something terrible, she gives you an alternative reality. And in this case, they've been blaming the victim, who was recently murdered by the ICE officer Jonathan Ross in Minneapolis. It turns out that her husband is, well, what's his association with the strategy group, the people that get the money to make the ads?
So what happened here is, early on in the Trump administration last year, one of the first things that happened at DHS was they put out these more than $200 million contracts for this ad campaign. Some people might have seen these ads. Some of them have Kristi Noem kind of like talking to the camera. Some of them have Kristi Noem on horseback with Mount Rushmore in the background, and she's basically saying, like, illegal immigrants, go home type of message. And, you know, this is a fairly extraordinary thing. It's a quite significant amount of money for an ad campaign, more than $200 million of public money for an ad campaign. But it was very, you know, it caught our attention from the beginning, because the main recipient of this money was a Delaware LLC that had been created just a few days before getting this absolutely massive government contract. So just an entirely new entity that had never existed before, and certainly wasn't like a actual company that does ad buying with a staff and a website and all that sort of thing. So we started looking into it, and what we found is that secretly, not listed on any of the contracting documents, not known to the public, one of the firms that is actually doing the work for these Kristi Noem ads is a firm called the Strategy Group out of Ohio. And that firm is run by the husband of the chief DHS spokeswoman, Tricia McLaughlin, who you mentioned, you know, she's all over the press whenever one of these episodes of violence happens. And what we were told by, you know, government contracting experts is this raises quite significant questions around what, you know, how did this government money make its way to the husband of the head of public affairs at DHS? And the Office of Public Affairs at DHS was actually the office dealing with this advertising contract. And so we don't know the answer to that. I mean, DHS told us that there was no wrongdoing here, but they didn't really engage on the details. And so there's still a lot of questions about how did Tricia McLaughlin's husband's firm get this contract? And also, who else is getting the money from this contract? Because we think there may be more non-public subcontractors here, and we would like to know who they are.
And what do we know about the Delaware company, Safe America Media?
So this was another kind of thing that caught our attention about this is, if you look it up, you know, you can't get much from the state of Delaware about corporations that are created there. That's kind of what the state of Delaware is for. But you do get an address. And when you look at the address of this firm, it's actually just a residential home in Virginia outside of Washington, D.C., owned by a veteran Republican operative who does advertising work. But But frankly, we still don't really know who is doing most of that work, because this Delaware LLC, again, is not a real company. It doesn't have a real office. It's based at this residential house, you know, handling a $200+ million ad contract, takes a certain number of people to make the ads, you know, deal with the TV stations. Some of this is happening internationally. These ads are actually running also in Mexico and some other places south of the United States. And so we were able to figure out the connection to Trisha McLaughlin's husband only through kind of shoe leather reporting, because DHS isn't answering questions about this, but we think there's more here.
Justin Elliott is a ProPublica reporter. He spoke with Background Briefing host Ian Masters. Background Briefing airs weekdays on KPFA. And you are listening to the Pacifica Evening News on KPFA. I'm Max Pringle. This newscast airs each night at 6. Back with more news after this.
Hey, family. If you haven't already, I invite you to tune in to one of KPFK's strongest traditions, our Spanish language slate, airing Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight. A rich mix of public affairs, environmental justice, immigration news, deep dives into Latin America, and of course, music that moves the soul. It's community radio at its finest, an español for la comunidad. So tell a friend, spread the word, and listen in Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight, right here on KPFK 90.7 FM and kpfk.org. Familia, les tengo una invitación especial.
This is Gary Oldman. You're listening to radio powered by the people, KPFK 90.7 FM.
A former police officer was acquitted this evening of charges that he failed in his duties to confront the gunman at an Uvalde, Texas elementary school during the critical opening minutes of what would become one of the deadliest school shootings in American history. Jurors deliberated for more than 7 hours before finding former Uvalde Schools police officer Adrian Gonzalez not guilty in the first trial over the hesitant law enforcement response to that attack that killed 19 children and two teachers at Robb Elementary School in May of 2022. Flanked by his lawyers, Gonzalez appeared to be fighting back tears after the verdict was read out in court. The trial was a rare case in the U.S. of an officer facing criminal charges on accusations of failing to stop a crime and protect lives. Gonzalez had faced the possibility of up to 2 years in prison if convicted. The nearly three-week trial included emotional testimony from teachers who were shot and survived. Prosecutors had argued in laying out their case that Gonzalez abandoned his training and did nothing to stop or interrupt the teenage gunman before he entered the school. At least 370 law enforcement officers ultimately rushed to the school, where 77 minutes passed before a tactical team finally entered the classroom to confront and kill the gunman. Gonzalez was one of just two officers indicted, angering some victims' families who had said they wanted more officers held to account for the law enforcement lack of response. A powerful winter storm is settling in over much of the eastern half of the United States, bringing snow, wind, and ice, and potentially knocking out power for thousands. Mitch McCann has more.
America's National Weather Service has imposed winter storm watches across the southern and eastern U.S., with the weather set to affect more than 20 states, including Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas, and Louisiana. The meteorological website AccuWeather says potentially hundreds of thousands of people may go without electricity and heat for days. Mitch McCann, New York.
A Justice Department court filing released this week shows that two members of Elon Musk's Doge team at the Social Security Administration were referred for possible Hatch Act violations over allegedly secretly communicating with an advocacy group seeking data to overturn election results. Christina Honestad has more.
U.S. Solicitor John Sauer made arguments for President Donald Trump, alleging Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook committed mortgage fraud, a claim she denies.
Such behavior impugns Cook's conduct, fitness, ability, or competence to serve as a governor of the Federal Reserve. The American people should not have their interest rates determined by someone who was, at best, grossly negligent in obtaining favorable interest rates for herself.
He argued Trump was within his rights to remove Cook. She's the first Black woman on the Federal Reserve Board, who's also a Democrat. Her attorney, in a letter to the Justice Department, had noted a single 2021 mortgage document lists two residents as primary and called it plainly innocuous in light of several other truthful and more specific disclosures about the homes she had purchased. Another document calls one of the homes a vacation home. Conservative Chief Justice John Roberts appeared sympathetic towards Cook's defense and was skeptical of arguments on behalf of Trump.
Is what you said after that apply in the case of an inadvertent mistake contradicted by other documents in the record?
We would say yes. For example, the president's removal order says either this is deceit or at least it's gross negligence.
Again, Justice Roberts.
I suppose we can debate that, with how significant it is in a stack of papers you have to fill out when you're buying real estate.
Trump has made similar claims of mortgage fraud against adversaries, and his Department of Justice has launched probes into them, including New York Attorney General Letitia James, also a Black woman Democrat. She's prosecuted Trump. The Department of Justice is also investigating California Senator Adam Schiff. But reporting by Politico finds several high-ranking officials in Trump's executive branch have also claimed more than one primary residence in their mortgage applications, including EPA head Lee Zeldin, Labor Secretary Lurie Chavez de Ramir, and Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. The investigative outlet also reported last month Trump's own mortgages, claiming two primary residents meet his own definition of mortgage fraud. That issue aside, another conservative justice, Brett Kavanaugh, addressed a different concern, giving the president unprecedented carte blanche authority to remove a Federal Reserve governor without any process. No president has fired a sitting governor in the 112-year history of the Fed, which was structured to be an independent body, free from day-to-day politics.
Your position that there's no judicial review, no process required, no remedy available, very low bar for cause that the president alone determines, and that would weaken, if not shatter, the independence of the Federal Reserve that we just discussed.
Cook's lawyer, Paul Clement, argued the president overstepped his authority. The way to remove a Federal Reserve governor would be through impeachment, through the House and Senate. The real reason for trying to fire Cook, Trump's critics say, is his desire to exert control over interest rates, drive them down so he can tout a strong economy that's rebounding from inflation during his presidency. He's repeatedly called on the Fed to lower interest rates, and his Department of Justice is now probing Fed Chair Jerome Powell, who attended Cook's hearing. Outside the Supreme Court, Democrats blasted Trump's attempts. Maxine Waters is a ranking Democrat on the House Financial Services Committee.
This is about power and control. Donald Trump wants to control the Federal Reserve so that he can manipulate interest rates, interfere with markets, and use our independent government agencies to advance his own agenda. He wants the central bank that answers only to him.
I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
Former DEA agent has been sentenced to 5 years in federal prison for corruption. A jury convicted Joseph Bongiovanni of using his badge to protect childhood friends involved in drug trafficking in Buffalo, New York. Today, U.S. District Court Judge Lawrence Villardo issued the sentence, which was less than the 15 years prosecutors sought. Bongiovanni was convicted of obstruction of justice and conspiracy charges. Prosecutors said his actions caused significant damage for 11 years. The case also highlighted corruption within the DEA, with at least 17 agents facing federal charges in the past decade. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says about 4,000 buildings in Kyiv remain without heating, and nearly 60% of the city is without power following days of Russian attacks on Ukraine's power grid right in the middle of winter. This comes as President Trump is set to meet Zelensky this week. Sagar Bagani has more.
President Volodymyr Zelensky says nearly 60% of Kyiv is without power as Moscow continues hammering the capital's power grid amid one of the coldest Ukrainian winters in years. Against that backdrop, the two presidents are due to speak Thursday, with President Trump urging both Zelensky and Vladimir Putin to reach a peace deal.
And if they don't, they're stupid. That goes for both of them.
Trump envoy Steve Witkoff says he'll discuss proposals to end the war with both Putin and Ukrainian officials.
I'm hopeful. That all meetings will go well on that subject. We need a peace.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Iranian state TV has issued the first official death toll from recent protests, saying 3,117 people were killed in the demonstrations that began at the end of December. The figure is lower than the 4,560 people that activists say died. This, as Iran has issued a threat against the U.S. if it's attacked. More from Charles de la Desma.
This comes after Tehran's crackdown on protesters and as a U.S. aircraft carrier group moves toward the Middle East. Abbas Araghchi made the threat in an opinion article, blaming armed demonstrators for the violence. Videos from Iran show security forces targeting unarmed protesters. The death toll from the protests has reached at least 4,519, according to U.S.-based activists. More than 26,300 people have been arrested, with fears of executions coming amid the ongoing tensions. I'm Charles de la Desma.
At least 11 Palestinians, including three journalists, two teenage boys, and a woman, were killed in Israeli attacks in Gaza today. That's according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Hospitals say it was one of the deadliest days in the war-ravaged enclave since a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel took effect in October. More from Lauren Schmidt.
Three journalists were killed in Gaza after their vehicle was struck in the central strip. That's according to the Egyptian Committee for Gaza Relief. Mohammed Mansour, a spokesperson with the aid group, said the journalists were documenting a newly established displacement camp when their clearly marked vehicle was hit. Mansour said the vehicle was well known to the Israeli military.
Israeli aircraft targeted a vehicle belonging to the Egyptian committee, and three people were killed. The vehicle was clearly marked as humanitarian. The victims were on a humanitarian mission, and people frequently saw them documenting the committee's work.
The Israeli army released a statement saying it had identified suspects operating a drone that it claimed posed a threat to Israeli troops. But Mohammed Jamal, another official with the Egyptian committee, disputed that account.
This area is a green zone. There was no shelling or military activity. They were there doing their work normally, like everyone else.
The journalists killed were Abed Sha'at, a freelance photographer and regular contributor to Agence France-Presse. Mohamed Keshta, a spokesperson for the Egyptian committee, who reported news to a large Telegram following. And Anas Ghanaim, a freelance photographer and drone operator who worked with Smart Media. The Committee to Protect Journalists is calling for a transparent investigation, saying at least 207 Palestinian journalists and media workers have been killed in Gaza since the war began in 2023, now including the three since the October ceasefire. They are the latest deaths, bringing the total to more than 470 killed since the so-called ceasefire began. Press freedom groups say Israeli forces have acted with impunity, pointing to previous cases in which journalists were targeted without accountability. At the end of December, Senator Peter Welch disclosed that Israel had closed its review into a 2023 Israeli strike in southern Lebanon that killed Reuters journalist Issam Abdallah and critically wounded others, including Dylan Collins, an AFP journalist and U.S. citizen.
This is not an incident in the fog of war. It was a war crime carried out in broad daylight and broadcast on live television.
The director of advocacy for the Committee to Protect Journalists, Amelia Evans, said the U.S.'s failure to respond when one of its own citizens is deliberately targeted sets a dangerous precedent for journalists and the rule of law worldwide.
If accountability is not possible in this case, then what does that mean for the more than 200 Gazan journalists who have been killed?
For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
Voting rights groups in Nevada say they're concerned about an organized challenge to voter rolls called the Pigpen Project. They say challenges like this are designed to deter voters. Suzanne Potter has more.
The Pigpen Project's blog says it has recently conducted Zoom training to introduce volunteers to a web-based tool designed to spot inconsistencies in voter registrations. Carrie Dermick is the Nevada State Director for the nonpartisan nonprofit All Voting is Local. She says voter challenges are legal, but by law they must be brought on the grounds of personal knowledge.
Personal knowledge is defined as firsthand knowledge through an experience or observation of facts on the ground under penalty of perjury. So our concern is what tactics are they using to get that personal knowledge on these challenged voters.
The Pigpen Project is sponsored by Las Vegas-based nonprofit Citizen Outreach Foundation, whose logo carries the tagline, "Irritating Liberals since 1992. It is led by Chuck Muth, a former head of the Nevada Republican Party. The organization did not respond to a request for comment by deadline. The project's website says it aims to clean the voter rolls by identifying suspected ineligible voters and turning documentation into election officials to get them removed so fewer ballots are mailed out. Dermick questions the accuracy of computer programs used to identify the suspected ineligible voters and worries the efforts will deter people from voting.
These tactics 100% intimidate voters and discourage voting. And also, if this does happen to someone, if they are purged off their voter rolls incorrectly, and then they go to vote, and they did not know that, that creates a horrible voting experience for them.
State and local elections officials say they have effective systems in place to verify voter eligibility, remove voters who have moved or died, and verify voter signatures on mail-in ballots. For Nevada News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Ryanair's CEO Michael O'Leary is dismissing Elon Musk's idea of buying the Irish airline and shrugging off his insults. The spat began when Ryanair ruled out installing Musk's Starlink Wi-Fi on its planes. O'Leary called Musk an idiot, while Musk labeled O'Leary misinformed. Musk even joked about buying Ryanair on social media. O'Leary noted that non-European citizens can't own a majority stake in European airlines. He added that if Musk wants to invest, it would be a better choice than his investment in X. Ryanair used the spat for a promotional seat sale featuring a caricature of Musk. Japan posted a trade deficit for the fifth straight year last year. That's according to government data. As concerns continue to grow over President Trump's tariffs and the political rift with neighboring China. The finance ministry reported that Japan logged a $17 billion trade deficit last year, nearly 53% smaller than the deficit Japan marked the previous year. Exports for the year rose 3.1%, while imports remained about the same on year, gaining less than 1%. For the month of December, Japan recorded a $669 million trade surplus. Despite funding cuts from the state and federal governments, Planned Parenthood's reproductive health care clinics across Texas are expected to serve more than 100,000 patients this year. More from Frieda Ross.
Texas lawmakers cut Planned Parenthood from most of its Medicaid funding in 2013 before abortions were banned in the state. Sarah Wheat with Planned Parenthood of Greater Texas says the cuts make it harder for low-income patients to get routine care.
So many of our patients, they've always known, were a resource for getting your birth control updated or coming in and getting an HIV test or a screening for STIs or that annual exam where we can screen you for cervical cancer and hypertension and anemia. We've always provided these services. In fact, this was our 90th year here in Texas.
The Trump administration recently agreed to release millions of dollars in federal funding to Planned Parenthood and other family planning groups. Last year, the Department of Health and Human Services was sued for withholding over $27 million in funding from 16 organizations, saying they violated civil rights laws. While many clinics across Texas have been forced to close or consolidate, Planned Parenthood now offers telehealth services for patients who don't have a nearby clinic. Wheat says they will continue to fight for reproductive rights and rely on donors in the meantime.
There's a real understanding from so many of the donors and foundations who support this healthcare because I think it's really widely recognized as being essential and that preventive care has to be available. It's vital to the health of Texans.
The nation's largest clinic, which was in Houston, closed last year. There are currently 28 clinics operating across the state. I'm Frieda Ross, Texas News Service.
Just hours before LA's annual point-in-time count of the city's homeless residents, Los Angeles County Supervisors Catherine Barger and Lindsay Horvath announced a new Homeless Services and Housing Department. Sarah Mahan, who is the Director of Housing and Health for the county, will lead the new agency, which absorbs the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, or LASA, which had been found to have mismanaged hundreds of millions in taxpayer funds while the homelessness problem continued to grow in the county. The county will run the new agency. Supervisor Catherine Barger insists that accountability is of utmost importance and that the Homeless Services and Housing Department is committed to doing things differently.
Accountability now ends with the board. We are bringing in the money as it relates to the measure, and it's important for us to recognize that the buck is going to stop with us.
LASA will still lead the regional homeless population count, and the new county-run department will be in charge of all other resources and services.
They are continuing to provide this service for the region. It is part of the continuum of care responsibility that actually the federal government requires in order for a region to get funding from the federal government.
Measure A, a voter-approved 2024 half-cent sales tax, is the program's main source of funding. Barger says the billion-dollar budget will be efficiently and effectively used to meet the needs of the county's homeless population.
We are enhancing and streamlining all the tools in our toolbox to provide housing and homeless services with more strategy and with a greater urgency.
L.A. County Housing Director Sarah Mahan promised Angelenos that these changes will result in a better delivery of resources and services to those that need them.
So you can see how many people are moving off the streets, how many people with serious mental illness and substance use are going into housing, and we'll continue to roll out that kind of information.
Supervisor Barger says the essential benefits of consolidating resources within the Emergency Centralized Response Center, where HSH is headquartered, are streamlined communication, faster coordination, and better outreach, among other benefits. The vast field of over 5,800 electric and hybrid vehicles gleamed on the cargo deck of the BYD Changzhou, a Chinese container vessel, unloading today at a river port in eastern Argentina. In other places, such a scene would be noteworthy. Chinese automaker BYD has sped up its exports and undercut rivals the world over, alarming Washington, upsetting Western and Japanese auto giants, and unnerving local industries across Southeast Asia, Africa, and Latin America. But the sight of so many new Chinese EVs gliding onto a muddy riverbank in Buenos Aires province was unprecedented for Argentina, run for decades by the left-wing populists that protected local industry with stiff tariffs and import restrictions. Netflix is now offering to buy Warner Brothers Discovery's studio and streaming business in an all-cash deal. This move aims to win over Warner's shareholders for a $72 billion merger and counter a bid from Paramount. Netflix and Warner today announced a revised transaction to simplify the structure and speed up a shareholder vote. The all-cash offer is valued at $27.75 per Warner share. Warner's leadership supports the merger with Netflix. Meanwhile, Paramount has made a nearly $78 billion offer and plans a proxy fight. The sale could face antitrust scrutiny and political influence. A Portland, Oregon baby got sick with infant botulism after drinking contaminated ByHeart formula donated through a program that helps poor and homeless families. Ashawn Carter, now 10 months old, is one of more than 50 babies sickened in a botulism outbreak in the U.S. His mother, Angel Carter, says she received a can of ByHeart from a caseworker with the Oregon Department of Human Services. The social services agency received formula through a ByHeart program that has provided 24,000 cans of formula to at-risk families since 2022. All ByHeart formula dating to March 2022 has been recalled. An 18-year-old has pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and other charges for a mass shooting in North Carolina in 2022. The attack left five people dead, including the youth's brother and a police officer. Austin Thompson admitted to the crimes today, avoiding an upcoming trial. His attorney said this decision was to spare the community further trauma. A sentencing hearing is set for February. Thompson was 15 at the time of the crimes, so he cannot receive the death penalty. At issue is whether he'd be sentenced to life in prison without parole or could become eligible for parole decades from now. Governor Gavin Newsom's office said his appearance at the World Economic Forum in Davos was canceled under pressure from the Trump administration. Newsom had been scheduled to sit down with Fortune magazine at an event sponsored by USA House, the country's official headquarters at the annual gathering of world and economic leaders. But before the talk was due to begin, his team says the USA House bowed to political pressure from Trump administration and denied the governor entry. Newsom shared the statement on social media, adding, quote, "How weak and pathetic do you have to be this scared of a fireside chat," unquote. According to Newsom's office, the governor was invited by Fortune last week to participate in a fireside chat scheduled to take place following President Trump's address. On Monday, his office accepted the invitation. Shortly before the event was due to begin, his office said, a USA House official informed Newsom's team that they were canceling the Fortune event and that Newsom would not be allowed to speak with media at the venue. Cloudy tonight in the San Francisco Bay Area, lows in the 40s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, highs in the 50s. In the Central Valley, cloudy tonight, lows in the 40s. Mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the 60s. In the Los Angeles area, cloudy tonight, lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, highs in the 60s. That's it for the news tonight. I'm Max Pringle. EA is at the controls. Good evening.
Looking for a unique way to support KPFK? Consider donating property you no longer need. It could be an inherited home, a vacant lot, or a piece of land that's just not part of your plan anymore. Your gift helps fund the programs you rely on and love. Get started today. Visit kpfk.org/real estate or call 844-277-4663 to learn more about real estate donations.